Perek Beis Pasuk Chaf. Okay, it's on page 36. V'chorati lohem bris b'yom ahu im chayas ha-sadeh. Hashem says, I'm going to forge a covenant. I'm going to forge with them on that day b'yom ahu im chayas ha-sadeh, with the chayas ha-sadeh, the wild animals of the field. V'imayf ha-shamayim, the birds in heaven. V'remes ha-adama, the creepy crawlers on the earth, the keshes, a bow, the cherev, a sword, umulchama, eshbar min aretz, I will cause to cease. Eshbar, I will break. It will cease min aretz. The hishkaf tim lavetach, and I will cause them. I will bring about. This is in the hifl form. The hishkaf tim lavetach. I will cause that they will be able to lie down in security. There's a lot going on in this pasuk. This pasuk is quite a mouthful. So let's go slow. Let's see what it says in pasuk chaf. Let's first take a look at the mitzvah. Let's start with pasuk chaf. The charati. Okay, it's on page 36, towards the bottom. The charati. I'm going to be koires. Koires means to forge a covenant. Ritzon loymar chayas hasadeh lo yashchisu bohem ki ilu korsu imohem bris shalom. The wild animals in the field are not going to cause any harm. It's as if I went and I had a conversation with the animals, and we came to an agreement that the wild animals will not inflict any harm among the human beings. Okay, next words of the Mitzudos. Turn to the Eshbar, turn to page 39. And then Eshbar, I will cause that all of these things, all various types of weapons, types of mulchama, which include Kesha, Eschadeh, Mulchama, Eshba, Min Aretz, Mitzudos, Ritzon Lema, Avatel, Klei, Mulchama, Vah, Mulchama, Atzma. It's a very powerful expression that there's not going to be any Klei, Mulchama. The Mulchama itself will cease to exist. And that's going to be a very big problem because the economy is built on war. Okay, that's a very big thing. What took the United States out of the Depression?
Out of the Depression,
World War II. No?
It also put us in
the World War I. World War I, okay. It took the economy. I mean, how many people died? And well, it's not a joke. But today, if you think about it, today a very significant, if I'm not mistaken, it's very significant.
Generally they say war is good for economy.
Yeah, war gives people jobs.
But in general, if I'm not mistaken, the economy, world economy, a major, major chunk of the world economy is built upon the production of weapons. All different types of weapons. And weapons that we know about, weapons we don't know about. Things that are going on out of space. And war itself is a form of employment for a very significant chunk of the country. For every country, people who are in the military, all the different, the whole hierarchy from top to bottom, you know, they have parnasa. So when you say that the whole industry of war ceases to exist, and all of the weapons that go along with the war, that creates an incredible challenge in the way the world exists today. How will the world economy continue to survive the way it is today? But with Mashiach, it's the least of his problems. He has to grapple with quite a number of other problems.
It won't be such a problem.
Won't be such a problem, but it's an amazing thing over here that this whole idea of the klei milchama, the actual concept of war, and the weapons are going to cease to exist. This is nogeh halacha lemaisa when it comes to Lucha Shabbos, and Shabbos is a person allowed to wear on Shabbos weapons as a malbush. Are you allowed to wear armor? Are you allowed to wear? I don't remember the difference. Mishnayis and Masechta Shabbos. There's a whole parak devoted to this. All the different things where the person is allowed to wear in the street. Yeah. And one of the topics of discussion is to wear weapons. Yeah. The question is a weapon called a malbush, or is a weapon called something even though you wear it, or is it something called you're carrying? And the question, the Gemara has a discussion to explain the machloekas, different opinions between different opinions, is will war cease to exist at the end of days? If war will cease to, do we look into the future? Since the pasuk tells us that in the end of days, war will not exist, so weapons are meant to become obsolete. So how does that affect the halacha today with regard to wearing a weapon? Is a weapon just a a tool, or is it an ornament? Or is it even called an ornament? Look today, there are. You go to the Britain, you go to different countries where they have traditions, and the soldiers or different honor guards, they wear clothing and they wear weapons from 500 years ago, which are totally obsolete. Okay, these weapons don't work, and these weapons serve no function today. But yet, it is a sign of dignity. It represents their history, represents their traditions. And even though it's not actually functional, but it's still called a malbush. Here, it's interesting that it says these things eshbar min aretz seem to indicate that, if you take the pasuk very literally, is that in the times of Mashiach, not only will the weapons not be used as a functional, they're not going to be used. Maybe even they're not even going to be used as an ornament or some type of symbolic reminder of the past. Like when you go to the changing of the guard in the Washington, or you go, I don't know, go to London, and they have different you see different soldiers wearing clothing and wearing weapons from ancient times. No, they're not going to wear it. We don't want to even associate. We don't even recall anything about the past as any remiss to violence and bloodshed and Muhammad. Just like we had before in Pasuk Yud Ches, where it says that v'lo sikri li od ba'ali. According to most in the Farsha, there's nothing inherently wrong with the term ba'ali. Ba'ali means my husband. However, since for many years the word ba'al was used as a avodah zara, ba'al was the avodah zara, we don't even want to call Hashem by the term ba'ali, even though there's nothing inherently wrong with the word ba'ali, because it reminds us of the olden days when we worship this thing called the Baal. There's nothing wrong with the term, it's just even to be reminded. If you want to follow that pattern, to continue that pattern to the next pasuk, when it talks about when Mashiach will come, it's going to cease to exist, the Kesh, the Ched, the Muhammad, Eshbar min Aretz. Eshbar is a powerful word. It doesn't just mean that, okay, there's no more war. No one's gonna shoot guns, no one's gonna shoot missiles.
What about Amalek?
Amalek? Oh, very good question. Maybe it means after the Churban of Amalek. Maybe this pasuk over here means that this pasuk will go into effect after Amalek has been eliminated. When Amalek has been eliminated, so now Melchama will come to an end. We're not going to even want to recall what was in the past by having a remiss to these weapons. Or maybe what it means in a Hanami, the way we're going to eliminate Amalek is not going to be through weapons. Maybe the way we eliminate Amalek is going to be through tefillah. It's going to be through other techniques. We will just defund them. We'll take away their resources, and Mamela, they will just be obliterated off the face of the earth. Okay, who knows what these things did? I'm just throwing out some ideas. Let's now take a look at Rashi. Rashi Pasuk again. The Mitzvot over here, when he talks about animals, there's no symbolism. Just as very simple, I'm going to cause the animals to make peace with mankind. They're not going to bite. You're not going to hear these horror stories where a bear penetrated into a residential area and cause damage. The animals are going to behave themselves. They're going to assist men. They're not going to cause us any harm. You're not going to hear about a story of a dog biting a man. There'll be no need for these type of things. Rashi says pasuk chaf eshbar, pasuk of eshbar, I will cause to cease min in chayas asodeh shashpis mazikin min oilam v'chein oimer lo yorei v'lo yashchisu. Rashi does not say anything very elaborate. He just says, I'm going to cause mazikin, creatures that cause harm, are going to cease to exist. Next Rashi, that's what Rashi says here. Now let's see some of the mafarshim. Let's take a look at look at Pasik Chof in the Radach. No, there's not really famous. No, there's not really. Let's read the Radach. This is the Radach, which is very short anyway. Pasik Chof in Charati. Al derech ki'im avne hasode b'risecha. The chayas hasode hosh l'moloch. Okay, Pasik in Eov, that the avne hasode, the stones of the field, and the chayas hasode will make peace with you. The name of it was Yeshaya, the gar, this is a very famous pasuk, the gar ze'ev kin keves, the wolf and the lamb. The wolf and the lamb will dwell together. You have a raya to that, already a dugma, on Coney Island Avenue M, the wolf and the lamb. They will live together.
Dead wolf and dead lamb.
What?
Dead wolf and dead lamb.
There's a story, there's a notice from Manhattan, that's where it really comes from. Zev was like a delicatessen, right? Delicatessen was very good. I remember going there in Manhattan. My mother once took me there, a long time ago. Gar Zev and Keves, we call the Indian Kamosh Sha'omar Sham. Taradas, there is Rabbi Wolf. There is a joke about this. There are two very, very prominent Talmidei Chachamim who are attacked are still a wolf. Rabbi Wolf, Rabbi Lamb. That's right. Rabbi, what's Rabbi Wolf's first name? Rabbi Wolf. Forgot his name. What?
The father?
No, no. No, they're in Tarvadas right now. There are two. There are two very prominent. One. He was a very close Talmud to Rabbi Belsky, and in fact, a lot of the article published book. They have a lot of stories from Rabbi Wolf. Rabbi Wolf learned Rabbi Belsky b'Chavrusa. Who knows? 30, 40 years, and Rabbi Lamb. Rabbi Lam is another. He works in the yeshiva. He has a position in the yeshiva to some degree. He has other functions, and they learned chavrusa for many years together. First seder, the ze'ev im keves. Okay, just give me some side whatever. V'holin yisham hasham. The next words of Radak. The next page 39. V'gam oif hashamayim kamo arbe v'zulasa. So the Radak here is talking something very interesting. And he says, refers to locust. He's calling here a locust a bird. Locust is very significant. This week's parsha. Bo el paro, ki ani echbalti es libo. This week's parsha begins with locust. And in one of the Slum Yoyal, we're going to Slum Yoyal eventually over here. Okay? And in Yoyal, there is also the story about the locust. And there's always this comparison between the locust of Parshas Bo and the locust of Sefer Yoyel. Rashi actually quotes, there's never going to be Arba like this ever again. And the problem is, there was locust again like this in time of Yoyel. And the Gemara differentiates different minim. There's one min, many minim. Locust, we, Baruch Hashem in America, we don't really relate to this. It does happen occasionally out in the West. In the West, does happen, but in the Middle East, it's something which is a very, very big problem. It's very, very common, and they have in Egypt is a problem, and in Eretz Yisrael is a problem. And today they have technology. They have a lot of technology. The reason why we don't hear about it is because they have technology.
It was 10 years ago, it came to Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, there was a very
on the
border. It's a very mystical where exactly it stops. It's a very interesting idea. This whole thing of locust. Today they have a lot of technology. Where they send out planes and they give out sounds, certain types of sound waves. They produce sound waves which they try to scare with the locust. The locust should not proceed, because the locust can be lethal, can completely destroy the crops of the fields. Here the Radak is very novel in his interpretation, that says the Oif HaShamayim does not refer to birds. It refers to things that fly in the heaven. It refers specifically to locusts. And there's never going to be a situation in Eretz Yisrael where we're going to worry that the locust, the Arba, is coming to destroy the crops. This is a very common fear in ancient times, locust. Next words, v'remes v'adam. What is that? Come on, nechashim v'akravim, snakes and scorpions. That's not going to be an issue today. We don't, Baruch Hashem, we don't concern ourselves for this. But we know in halacha, if you leave a cup of water exposed for 10 seconds, you walk out of the room and the cup of water has been exposed, you're not allowed to drink the water, because there is a concern that a snake has come out of the ground, has injected its poison into this cup of water, and has went back into its hole. This is the Gemara is all over gilui, and there are people ad hayom hazeh. We're makbid on this. They do not leave exposed water. The Chazon Ish was very makbid on this. He, even though in Eretz Yisrael today, more or less, there's no chash in the residential areas of snakes like America, yet Chazon Ish said that when Chazal gave a reason why you're not allowed to drink water that's been exposed, they only gave you one of many reasons. And if Chazal said do not do it, you should not do it no matter what. The Chazon Ish pretty much the Das Yochid. Most people are not makbid. Water that's been exposed, you walk out, it's not, we don't, not so makbid. But we see from the Gemara that it was a very big issue, and here it says that the Nechashim Akravim are going to cease. Then it says here, the Keshes, Ebol, the Cherev, Kamosh Amar, the Chidisu, Charavoysam, Leitim, they're going to smash their swords into plowshares, Umil Chamaki, Targumai, the Avde, Karava, those who make war. Targum really adds, he adds another word. The Ovde. Ovde means people who conduct themselves in warfare. O Perusha Shor Kol Klei Muhammad Zulasi Keshes V'Chedev Shazohar. The Ligud Radak, what the Radak seems to be saying over here is that war, this touched upon what I told you before, that war is not necessarily going to cease to exist. It's he says, the Ovde Kirava, people who conduct themselves in war. Today, you know, this really is a fulfillment of what is going on today, the Cold War. Really, what is warfare today? Think about it today. What is warfare today? Warfare today is to build up weapons. we don't want to engage in war. The war is who has more weapons. Because if you start up with us, we just push a button and you're gone. That is war. That in essence is war. What was the Cold War? It's just who can have more missiles, who can have more nukes. That's what it is. In ancient times, this concept didn't exist because no one really knew what the other team had. I don't know what you have. You don't know what I have. So if we have a disagreement, I don't like you. I go and I try to kill you. Things did not escalate. They just went to war right away. No one knew. There was the element of surprise. Today, the war, we don't have to get killed immediately. Before that happens, the war is who is the greater power, who is the greater threat, who is able to build up a stronger military which terrifies the other nation. You'll be obliterated off the face of the earth if we don't like you. We'll just push one button and we'll send off a couple of high-tech F-35s, blow you smithereens. So look at the Targum. See, we don't know if here the pasuk at face value, and it says over here milchama. Milchama means war. War will cease, which means that's it. West Point is closed down, shut down. There's no teaching of war. There's no military. There are no weapons. There's nothing. Targum says not so fast. Don't say that. Targum says the Ovdei Kirava, people who engage in war, people who go out into the fields. Who go out into the fields and fight combat, that will cease to exist. But war, the concept of war, the preparation, the buildup of arms, doesn't say it's not going to exist. And that's really...
Don't they go hand in hand?
What? Not necessarily. Well, that's the threat.
You have people that have a career of war.
It's that's the threat. It's the threat of that.
But there's a possibility of war.
Right, it's
take away the soldiers, there's no possibility of war.
If you need them, then you have
the... It's not the Ovdei Milchama, it's the threat. It's the threat of war. It's the threat of war. It doesn't say that war will cease. More or less, let's say the United States, who are they at war with now? They're at war in Afghanistan a little bit, in Iraq they have some troops. They have in Yemen, they have. But we are the United States at this moment in time engaging in a major, major war that takes the headlines of the news every single day? Baruch Hashem, no. We don't hear about this. We know there are pockets of war going on here and there. Okay, things are going on. But to say there's a major war going on, b'chaste Hashem b'li ayin hara, no. But does that mean that the United States is sitting back and doing nothing? No, they're spending every tax dollar plus a lot more to go and purchase and develop the most advanced weapons that the world has ever seen. To blow the world over, up a million times over in 10 seconds, in 1 second.
So,
what?
North Korea guy, he don't care.
So... Can we say today, it's not what it says here in the Targum. It says here in the Pasuk, Umil Chama, Eshba Min Aretz. War will cease to exist. Targum says no, doesn't mean war will cease. It means the Ovdei Milchama, the engagement of war. Today, Baruch Hashem, we're not engaging in war, but war is very much alive. Very much alive. The threat of war is very much alive. So the beginning of the Pasuk says, interesting, to go reject that, the beginning of the Pasuk says, I'm going to take away the Keshes and Cheref. So, you see, it's a little bit of a contradiction. And he's saying that we're not going to engage in war, but war, the theme, the build-up for war does exist. Like I just tried to show you, that's what it is today. So why then the same in the Pasuk, I'm going to take away the Keshes and the Cheref? Because the Keshes and the Cheref is actually the build-up to war. But if we're not going to have the Keshes and the Cheref, then you can't engage in war. Ovdei Milchama doesn't exist because you have no tools to engage in war. All right, whatever it means. I just want to point out
a different type of war. I think there's a pasuk in Tehillim. We do finger war, on the computer.
Cyber war. So you want to say? So you're saying? Mei saying very good. He's saying we're not going to have the traditional weapons of Keshes and Cheref. But war we're going to have still. The Ovdei Milchama, the threat is cyber threat. That if the United States was to push one button, you can wipe out... Yodi lekrav et vasai, fingers, with the fingers. You know how to type on the computer the right sequence of text in order to blow up the whole world. It's very true. It's very, very fascinating.
In either way, isn't this just in terms of whether it's preparation for war or people have a career war, isn't that the pure Hashem type of thing? How is this that Hashem is saying, I will do this? People have to realize on their own.
So what it means that Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to take away the need for it. Hashem is going to take away the need, and there won't be a need, so this industry will cease to exist. I mean, like, that's what it means. It doesn't mean that it means that Hashem is going to influence the world events. It's not necessary. This is not the way to go. Just like every other industry, which becomes obsolete. So we don't need certain things. Okay, let's go further. It's in the Radak, and the Radak then says, okay, that's it. He doesn't explain to the end of the pasuk. Now let's see the Malbim. There are some other ideas here that are very interesting before we get to the next pasuk. The Malbim pasuk Chaf. Okay, and the Malbim is on page 37. Pasuk Chaf. Recharatilchem bris bayomhu imchayas asadeh. The heavens, the heavenly sphere, and nature will no longer rule over men. We live now in a world where we view nature to be our masters. It's hard to see the Yad Hashem hidden in nature. So he's saying here something very, very deep. That the previous pasuk told us, in the previous pasuk we learned that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to cause to cease to exist the worship of Baal. And what does the worship of Baal represent? It represents the worship of the Koychavim and the Mazolos. So once we've knocked out the Koychavim and the Mazolos, so we're pretty much, who else do we look to for help? To Hashem. But there's still going to be other creatures in this world which are players. And they are the animals and the birds. The animals and the birds are not the same as the constellations, as the sun, the moon, all of this mythology, all of these things. So that's what this puzzle is coming to say, that even though that we have purified ourselves from worshipping the stars, the moon, the Shiva Kech Veleches, the seven bodily planets, the seven planets, we're still going to be challenged with our dealings with animals and birds. Animals. The chayes asoda, and therefore the pasuk here says, "Al chayes asoda ve'oyv shehim yisharu tachas anhagas hatevel lo bnei adam ki peirush bnei yitzchak b'avnel." And therefore, Hashem, then they are not under the anhaga of the mazalos. And therefore, we need to make peace with them, I guess, to recognize that they are not going to cause us harm. The only one that can cause us harm is Hashem if we do not follow in His ways. The Gam, Ki Peshuto Ye Omer, you can also translate the words very simply, Shelo Yimotze, it will not be found, O Shum Ra Ba'olam. Okay, it's on page 39 now. Shum Ra Ba'olam, Lo Mibale Harotzim, not from Mibale Harotzim, not from people who have free will, which means animals. Animals still have free will. I think this is a whole another very deep idea. That the mazolos, see the mazolos, the stars, the moon, the sun, they have a predictable orbit. So when a person would worship these things, he's really worshiping something which is fixed. Maybe that's why in this ideology of the Zara they have more power. Since they're predictable, there's stability. Anything which is stable, predictable, is stable. That, to a certain degree, gives a person satisfaction. When you're able to, when a person's life is always, we're living in a life of chaos. So if we can connect to a being that is stable and predictable, that is very comforting. So that is why it's a very great nisayon in ancient times not to worship the stars, the moon, the sun, because these are things which are predictable. They represent.
They're also used to predict.
They're used to predict because they are predictable. They're used to predict the future, and it's just it's something which is comforting. Man is a chaotic creature. We're always in a state. We're always in a state of flux. So when we can connect to something like this, it's reassuring.
Throw it. Hey.
Is your phone off?
Yeah.
Okay, good. No, what are you doing? It's so not nice. What are you doing?
Nice.
Come on, put it back. It's not nice.
Wow.
Come on.
What are you doing?
Okay, so now we go to the
So then what about animals? Chayas asad, the wild animals, are things which are b'nei bechira. They have free will. Animals have free will. So the pasuk here is saying that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he takes away from us the nisayon of worshipping the stars and the moon, but then we're still going to have to worry about animals. Of shum the animals, ki yichreis lachem brisim Hashem, will go and forge a covenant with these creatures. Haroi shelo yazigu. The gamu mashal al. Okay, now here is the part that I really wanted to get to. Okay, so here he only mentions this derech agaf. We have to elaborate upon this in the parentheses. Here the Malbim Kedarkoi says that all of the words here in this pasuk are really metaphors for people and different things. What does he mean? Mashal al hanashim hapiriyim, wild people. Okay, the word hapiriyim, and Michal pointed out, is a very unique word in the plural form for hu yihyeh pere adam. Okay, pere adam. Well, you know, there's an expression. I know someone who always says this person, says this expression. He says he's a para. They don't even say the word Adam. When you have a person that you really detest, I know a fellow who was an older person, and he got into a fight with someone, and he started cursing him, and he said, "This guy is a para. A para."
I love it.
He kept on saying it over and over. He didn't say the word para Adam, he said para. And I take it that he was saying, like, this is an old time expression, that a person who is a disaster to come in contact with, you call them a pera. So here it's in the plural, a nation that is hapiriyim, wild, corrupt, abusive people. Kichaisoi teref, like a wild animal that tears its prey apart. She'ochlu oisam b'mekedem, in the past the nations of the world have ripped us apart. And the pasuk here says that in the times of Mashiach we will forge a covenant with all of the nations of the world who have in the past ripped us apart. They will leave us alone. V'gam lo yimotsu os ro'os bali habechira. We're not going to find any evil will not come upon us from human beings. Human beings have free will. If they wish, they can go to war with us. They can inflict harm upon us. Hashem gave them free will. So here Hashem is saying that in times of Mashiach, Hashem will allow us to make a treaty, a covenant with human beings from every corner of the earth. They will not have the desire to go and bring upon us harm.
Why? I thought they would be defeated.
Not necessarily. So that we discussed many times, all the other svarim, is that there are different pockets, different groups. There are going to be some groups that will be obliterated, and there are going to be some groups that are going to be subdued, and there are going to be some groups of human beings that will just remain the way they are now. No difference. Business as usual. The only thing will be is that they will have an appreciation for Klal Yisrael. There are many different. It's a big world out there. Okay? 7 billion people. It's a lot of people. And each one, Hashem judges each person on their level. Through this, now here he's the only one that tells you what it means over here. Vishkaftim levetach. You're going to lie down in a sense of security. V'chein omar b'yecheskel v'chorati lechem bris shalom v'hashpati chaya ram in aretz v'yoshnu b'yorim, and they will sleep. I don't know what that word means. V'yoshnu means just to sleep in the forest. V'chein behavtochais aden aleviim, to sleep. I don't know. They will sleep in the forest. Not going to bother us. They're not going to come into our homes and attack us in the middle of the night. We do not need to be afraid. They'll come to look for us.
Who's going to sleep in the forest?
No, the animals. The animals will sleep in the forest. They're not going to come into the residential areas and attack us. V'chein behavtochais aden aleviim. Moshe Rabbeinu is the Adoin Hanavim. V'hishpati chayorah min aretz cherev loisavar bi'aretzich. And he's drawing a parallel with this very beautiful. The Malam does this is very. This is a very nice thing to do. If you can do this, he does this sometimes. Is to always to find the parallels between the Nevim who express the same concept. Chazal said that everyone. There's one Nevu that goes forward. The question is how you see it. Every Navi interprets the vision through their lenses, through their perspective. And everyone says it in a little different way, which is a new dimension to what these words mean. Elu v'elu divri elokim chayim. Every Navi is misnabe in his unique signoin, in his unique style. And here he's drawing a parallel between Yechezkel and Hosea and Moshe, the same idea. So if you go back to the pasuk, before you go, just go back to the pasuk, get a little bit more appreciation of what it means. I think a little bit of a drush, based on what we learned in the past, when it says v'karati l'cham bris b'yom ahu im chayas hasadeh, when Mashiach comes, Hashem will forge a covenant with the chayas hasadeh, the nations of the world. V'im oif hashamayim, that means the malachim, the angels. The angels and the demons and all of the heavenly forces. In Shemayim, there are a lot of malachim. We learned that malachim, when Klal Yisrael came to the Amsuf, the malach said, Hashem, why should you save the Jewish people? Halalu oiv the avodah zara, v'halalu oiv the avodah zara. The Egyptians are idol worshippers and the Jews are idol worshippers. Who is our friend in Shemayim that made such a nice accusation against us? Okay, so look at the Midrashim. I don't know which Malach it was, but obviously we don't have friends in high places. Okay, we have people in high places in Shemayim that are looking to make trouble for us. So those are the Oif HaShemayim. Last I remember, angels have wings, no?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Don't you see the angels every day? When you go into the Beis HaKisa, you're supposed to say, Ischadu Mechubodai. What? Six wings.
Yeah.
In time of Yeshaya, they only have four. When I looked at the Malachim, they only had four wings. Shalom Aleichem, every Friday night. Don't you see the Malachim? You Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Hasharis, every Friday night you greet the Malachim. And Mayor, how many wings do they have when they greet you Friday nights?
How many what?
Wings! You don't see the Malachim?
When you open the door, come in, they're coming in also with you.
They're wearing raincoats.
What?
They're wearing raincoats.
Raincoats? Yeah, they're in the Shema coats. The Shema coats. These are very large to cover the wings. I just like have the Shema for the hat, they have a Shema coat for the wings to cover. Special shade coats to cover their wings.
And Friday night when you come from the shul,
yes.
Two
malachim, that's right, you see it.
Yeah.
Just like Meir.
Man
same
tov,
age.
Man luto. If tov, akol beseder, give beracha.
And if not, then the other one says something not nice. So the Oiv HaShemayim L'chor is a remes to the malachim and Shemayim, we're going to have friends in high places. V'remes Ho'adama. What's the remes Ho'adama? The creeper crawlers of the earth. What would that be merames to? What would the remes ho'adama be merames to? I don't know. If we say the chayas hasada are the nations of the world, and the oif hashamayim is the malachim, so what's the remes? I want to suggest it means technology. We'll be at peace with technology. What swarms on this world? The remes is something which is the creepy crawler of the earth. The earth produces gashmias, and the gashmias, the advancement of gashmias is, I'm just suggesting, throwing out.
The World Wide Web.
So I want to suggest that today.
I want to say Tzadikim.
Tzadikim, no, Tzadikim is us. Okay. Technology is our greatest asset, and it's our greatest danger. And unfortunately, we all know too well, it's probably caused more harm than good. Progress leads to problems, and problems leads to progress, and progress leads to problems. Vicious, vicious cycle in this world. As every new advancement in technology comes, with that comes new problems. And then to overcome those problems, we have to go further, we have to have more progress. And with more progress comes new problems. The vicious, vicious cycle of advancement of technology. So I'm trying to suggest that Remes Ho'adam will be there, the Mashiach will come, we will make peace. We will make peace with technology. We all know, I know in my life, technology has done for me wonders I cannot even begin to imagine. And it's also done to me harm, enormous harm. I acknowledge it's ruined my life. It made my life infinitely better, but it also caused me a lot of problems. So we need to find that balance, that sweet spot. That's going to be the peace with the remes ho'adama. And then we took keshes is a remes, of course, to Yishmael, because Yishmael is v'hu yeh roiveh kashas. Cherev is Esav al charbucha tichyeh. Esav is the cherev. Umilchama Eshbar min aretz. What's the milchama? We will cease from the earth. So what does that mean? That means the other nations. I guess that means the other nations. They will cease. They're not in the United Nations of the chutzpah. The United Nations to get up and vote against us. V'hishkaftim levetach. There has to be something very deep to this, which we'll probably only understand when Mashiach comes. We don't need to lie down. You lie down in betach. Betach in a sense of security.
Right.
What does that mean exactly? You can lie down. It says perfectly the word betach in the Torah is used not in reference to lying down. It's even going to war. Reuven, what does it say in the Pasuk, Rabbi Yavsky, Baruch Hashem, you hear?
Yeah.
Reuven and Levi, when they went to attack Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi, when they went
Shechem.
It says they went in to attack Shechem, betach.
Yeah.
Vayavohu el ho'ir al ho'ir betach. They went to war. They went to obliterate the entire city with a sense of security. So you see in the Torah, that's probably the first place that betach is used. Betach is used in reference to war. War. Not in reference to going to sleep. I lie down on my bed. The first time a word is used in the Torah is where its essence is defined. If the first time the word betach is used in your attitude when you go out to war, they came upon the city of Shechem. Betach, that's war. And we went with a, we were all...
How do you translate the betach there?
There with a... So you translate it. Betach means confidence, with a sense of security. I mean, that's not a really good word over there. But it means what's the morale? They had high morale. They went in. So what's going on here? It says the ultimate peace is we're using the word betach. Halo davar.
Maybe it's talking about the.
They're going to lie down in sense of security?
I'm going to put him to sleep, basically.
The hishkaft him, we're going to lie them down. Okay, so you want to say that the word here is similar to the way it's used by Shimon and Levi. And the hishkaft him, Hashem is going to cause them, not us, cause them to lie down in their graves.
Well...
by us going to war against them in a sense of betach.
But war is always lakum, to get up to fight. And here, they're not going to fight anymore, so they're...
Zehu gibar ha-koivesh es yitzra. Who is the gibar? The one that conquers, the able to withhold, the ability to restrain yourself. This is the true gibar. So it's an interesting parallel flip between the way the word is used, if I'm not mistaken, the very first time it's used, war, the gevura, the ultimate confidence and gevura of war, of Shimon and Levi to conquer an entire city, two people, wipe out a whole city like nothing. A whole chazad and midrashim, it's like not to be believed.
They had a certain advantage there.
What's the advantage?
They had the
best meal on the third day.
And they went into the homes privately to tell them they had a cure for what the ails them.
And
they killed them in the room.
In the room, okay. Poison them. There are different interpretations. But the word betach is still being used in the context of going to war, of wiping out a city. And here it's being used in the opposite. It's not a kasha. I mean, the two extremes always fit into the same letters. And especially here, when Chazal tell us, what is true gevura? True gevura is restraint. Restraint. So here, Klal Yisrael, the whole world is out there. There's a whole world of vicious animals, birds, dangerous birds, and creepy crawlers, the Remes Adama. But you know what? I lie down, betach. Restraint. Because I know, as Zeo Gibar, we have the true Gevur. The Gevur is the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that would mean, if you're saying a Jewish now, the Keshes, the Chedev, and the Mulchama, Eshbar Min Aretz means Ha'aretz, the Hayidiyah, Eretz Yisrael. Can you imagine such a fantasy where the state of Israel will dissolve, will the IDF?
Disarm.
Not only disarm, everyone in the IDF would go to Koilov. It says we're shutting down the IDF. Everyone is drafted into a Koilov. No army for anyone. Whoever wants on eBay, F-35 is on eBay for $5. You want to buy an F-35?
Definitely a fantasy.
What a fantasy. Fantasy world. So I'm saying a wild shot to the past based upon what all of you just told me is that when it says over here that Mashiach HaMashim will forge a bris with the Chayas HaSada, the Eva Shemayim, and the Remes Radama, and they can have their weapons. Gesundheit, you can have all of your weapons and your nukes. Hashem will only take away the keshas, the cheref, and the mulchama, eshbar min ha'aretz, ha'aretz as in Eretz Yisrael. But all of our neighbors, every one of them, will be armed with enough nuclear weapons to blow up the world a million times over. And guess what? We don't have an army. We don't even have a. There's not a gun to be found in the whole Eretz Yisrael. And guess what? No one's afraid. Vishkaftim levetach. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, we'll go lie down with betach, with confidence that Hashem is on our side. Fantasy, right? Fantasy Ireland.
Why would you want the rest of Europe to go to war with each other and just...
Not against each other.
If you leave them their weapons... Then
okay, whatever, fine. Let them do whatever they want. But we our emunah in Hashem... Yeah.
Another vision is a universal vision of peace.
Okay, right. Nechalami. Absolutely. It means everyone. The Pshuta Shalmiku is weapons will cease to exist from the world. But I'm just saying a wild Jewish... Which is theoretically what Chazal always tell us, but it's way, way too extreme for us even to imagine that we can be on a madrega to say such a thing. But it's not against what Chazal picture, you know, the ideal in Hashkafa. We're living in this world, you know, we're not living in a fantasy island here. We're living in the real world. But it's a very. This is what Nechamim really say. Who says to the Levi Shal Levet? What does it mean exactly? Okay, all right, those are ideas.
In the case of Shimon Levi, on Yom Beta, Ma'i Bayom Hashlishi Biyotam Kohavim.
Yeah.
The third day that what they did.
They were in pain.
Nobody could move.
Correct.
Fight with them.
It was easy to wipe them out.
Why they were better? Because they should be sure that nobody is going.
They
to
were weak.
Be
they were weak
in front of them.
Okay, but you saw that's Pshudish Lomikwa. That is 100% accurate. But there's another pshat. The pshat is they are koyavim, they had charata, they were healthy. First of all, does it really take 3 days to heal from bris milah? That's a dilemma. An adult, maybe yes.
Abraham Avinu came to Yerai 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 Hashem Yerai Yerai.
Oh, that's right, it was the third day, he was in pain.
That's why the Barbara Nelson Vayom HaShlishi is not the third day of the Mila, it was the third day that this incident began. Vayom HaShlishi was the third day since Dina was abducted.
Uh-huh.
So it was right away.
Right away. Right away, in the beginning of the Mila. Hey, they were in pain.
For what?
So simply it means physical pain.
Yeah.
Right. Now there's a Chazal.
Yeah.
And Chazal say the pain was not the pain of Mila. They were completely healed. It was the pain that they did the Bris Mila. Doing a Bris Mila is a moral...
They changed their mind?
They changed their mind. Why? Because Bris Mila, Chazal say, I don't know what this means today among science. Chazal say that Bris Mila, it reduces one's taiva. It reduces one's pleasure. That's what Chazal say. So Shimon and Levi said, we're Jews, we are disciplined people, we are Parshim, we deny ourselves the pleasures of this world. And therefore we have Bris Milah, because we want to purposely deny ourselves pleasure in order to discipline, to restrain ourselves, in order to serve Hashem. We are Bali Musa. We're all the followers of Yisrael Salanter. If you want to be part of Klal Yisrael, Litvax only. You have to be a Purish. You have to be a Bali Musa. So they did it. They decided to be moral. They decided to be morally upright people. They are makabal upon themselves to be morally upright people. And they did the Bris Milah. And then what happened? We have Charata. What a mistake. What a mistake that now the pleasure that we have from this world is not the same and never will be the same due to the Bris Milah. They had Charata. When a person has charata, that he did a mitzvah, that he came close to Hashem, now you are finished. In Shemayim, the Mekatrigim, they're out to get you. So the Shechem was not physically weak. They had an army that was beyond our imagination. They were giboyrim, but spiritually bankrupt. They had no merit. Not only did they have merit, the fact that they had charata, that they did a mitzvah to the degree that it caused them tsar. We have charata that we served you, Hashem. So they were spiritually weak. So when Shimon and Levi came to fight a religious war, piece of cake.
Shechem Tinov is Baragan Pilis.
Yeah.
They weren't mechuyev mila.
No, that was their arrangement. If you want to be megayer,
they did it for financial gain.
Is that what the purpose was?
That's what he said. You want to marry our sister. Okay. We are not going to marry people who are pagans. Okay. We want you to show that you're going to go to convert. You're going to come close to Hashem. And Yadus demands precious. It demands precious. This is one of the nice stories. I read Rav Steinman, his whole life he was a Purish. He nothing meant pleasure in this world meant nothing to him. And there was a beautiful story where a boy came. There was a boy that was a Baal Taiva, a young boy that indulged in the pleasures of this world way beyond what the standard was. And his parents brought him to Rav Steinman. Rav Steinman said to him, Rav Steinman was one of the biggest Baalei Anava. All the stories, the famous story, Gaiva, there's a famous story from many years ago, Gaiva, he was very into teaching people not to be Bale Gaiva. So putting all humility aside, a boy came to him, parents brought a boy to him, and the Rebbe Steinman said to him, what do you want to be when you grow up? Who do you want to be like when you grow up? So the boy said, I want to be like you. I want to be a big Rosh Shiva, just like you. So he said, you want to be like me? Godel like me, a great person like me, putting all humility aside. You know how I became a Godel? I was a Poirish. I did not enjoy the pleasures of this world. I denied myself, I don't know if you had a choice, but I denied myself the pleasures of this world. Only by being a Poirish can you grow to be a great person.
Is mutar?
And if you're going to be a Baal Taiva, and seek out every good thing this world has to offer, you're never going to be like me. So, Shechem, you want to be a part of Klal Yisrael. Mila, Bris, this is the first Eid. I went to a Bris today. Today there was a Bris. I had a Bris today. A new member of the tribe. So, what is the first thing you do? Is you do the Bris Mila. You remove from him the nerve endings, which give a person, you have to be quiet, will give a person extra special pleasure in this world. The spitz of pleasure in this world, in Chazal's eyes, is defined two things: food and the marital relations. That's the Chazal's view of the two arayos and macholos asuros. In order to prevent us from indulging in food to the extreme, Chazal, the Torah, put upon us many, many restrictions. Only certain animals, and even among the certain animals, only certain parts, no fats. And the blood has to be removed. The Goyim tell us, you take away the blood, how could you eat a piece of meat? By removing the whole taste, the whole pleasure of a piece of meat is the blood. And you salt it, in addition to the salt, the taking away the blood, it's saturated with salt. What kind of food is this? They can't have people who today it's a different world because the whole it's a different world there. But this is what they say. Torah, why did the Torah do it to us then? Torah wants us to be Persian. Wants to deny we should be denied from the food. We have blown away, plenty left over. We don't have to worry. There are plenty of good things to enjoy in this world, but there are certain basic restrictions of macholos v'asuros. And in the world of arayos, there are noshim. There are many types of women that a man cannot marry, whether you like it or not. And even one's own wife, she's a nida. Half the month, she's a nida. And then even in the act of marital relations, there is denial of pleasure due to the bris mila. That's what the Rambam says. Okay, I don't know if this is anyone is familiar with the science minded today. Someone told me it's definitely true.
So what? Yeah. In terms of blood?
Bris mila reduces the hana of marital relations. This is what the Rambam writes. I'm not making this up. Let's go back to the Rambam. And among the Goyim, I don't know, among the Goyim, we know that the Goyim today, it used to be much more popular that they did bris mila for health reasons. For health reasons. They say that it's just down the line, the person becomes an adult, there are many benefits. There are many benefits in bris mila. And for some reason today, I don't know, the trend is being reversed today to some degree. I don't know why. And what? Whatever the reasons are. I don't know if this has anything to do with it, this idea of taiva.
That's one.
Oh, so it is. So it's acknowledged? It's acknowledged by the Goyim?
I don't know if it's scientifically proven, but it's believed perceived. By some.
It's perceived to be true.
From
the Rambam says it's a scientific fact.
Womb cancer.
What?
Sure?
Okay, that's a new thing today, that we know today that it reduces cancer.
They do it in the 8 days.
What?
In the 8 days they do.
When they're very young. If it's done when a person's a baby, then when he becomes an adult, it's been shown, the statistics are...
People are less...
Okay, go to it. Okay, let's now...
The main driver is the people who claim it's cruelty to children.
Cruelty, that's the reason.
That's the number one reason.
That's the number one reason. Okay, I hear. That's understandable, okay. All right, now let's now go to the next. The next past two psukim are extremely well-known psukim. You've all been saying this since your bar mitzvah. Hopefully you remember. Think about it. Do you remember saying this morning?
Yes.
Do you remember? You remember it? Yes. Good for you. We're about to read now.
Right.
Do you remember in your mind this morning saying these psukim? Ve'erastich li le'olam. Ve'erastich li b'tzad. No, I mean, do you remember? Remember when you woke up this morning? Do you remember if you brushed your teeth this morning? Ve'erastich li le'olam. I will betroth you to me forever. Ve'erastich li b'tzedek. I will betroth you to me with righteousness, uve mishpat, judgment, uve chesed, and with kindness, uve rachamim. That's four things right there. Tzedek, 1, 2, 3, 4. Ve'erastich li be'emuna, faith, v'yodat es Hashem. So how many do we have there in total? 7. Let's review. Ve'erastich li le'olam. Le'olam is a concept, forever. Okay, it's a concept, at least forever. It's 1. Ve'erastich li b'tzedek, 2. Mishpat, 3. Uve chesed, 4. Uve rachamim is 5. Ve'erastich li be'emuna, that's 6. V'yodat es Hashem is 7. How many times do you wrap around your arm? 7 times. The ritzu is around your arm 7 times. When you wrap around your finger, okay, you wrap around, most people wrap around 3 times on their finger. 1 for each one of the ve'erastich. Ve'erastich 3 times, but when you wrap around the finger 3 times and you say this psukim, you're really reviewing the 7 different concepts. Of a concept of le'olam, a concept of tzedek, mishpat, ches, rachm, a concept of emuna, and a concept of yidi, of yodat, es Hashem. Morning. So these are the 7 different ideas, all wrapped up, all in the framework of Erastich. Now we know that in the marriage, there are 2 parts to marriage. There is the Erisin and the Nisuin. The Erisin is only part 1. A woman is still forbidden to live with her husband until there is Nisuin. This is just the Erastich. And obviously, you see the parallel, the way a person makes does Nisuin, says in the Mishnah, there are 3 ways for a person to be... Erisin is the equivalent of Kiddushin. Kiddushin is Kiddushin and Nisuin. Kiddushin is to create the bond, but the couple is still forbidden to live together. Yichud is Aser until there is Nisuin. The first part is called Kiddushin or Erisin. And the second part is Nisuin, or it's called, there's only really 1 term, I think. The second part is the Nisuin. So here we're only discussing the Erisin. How does a person, I'm running through the first in my head, well, we're going to read inside just to get familiar with these ideas. How many ways, how many techniques can a person use to create the Erisin? 3. Either Kesef, Shtar, or Bia. Bia, that would mean a person would have with his Kala marital relations for the sake of creating the Kiddushin. And after this is done, he's not going to live with her. It's forbidden to live with her until they make Nisuin. And that can take a year in ancient times. So it appears to be prust. It appears to be not a thing to do. What kind of thing is that? A person goes and has marital relations 1 time to create the Erisin, and then is not allowed to live with his wife until they have the Nisuin. It doesn't seem to be right. So indeed, the Gemara says that Rav said anyone that marries a woman, creates the Kiddushin with Bia, will get lashes. He will be beaten up because it's a disgusting thing to, even though the Torah says it's legitimate, that's the way it can be done, you have a choice, it's not done. It's not, how can Rav be Mevatel? It's a very big question. How can Rav be Mevatel a Dovar Min HaTorah? We have a general rule, it's a Dafyom Min HaTorah long ago. Chazal are not allowed to be Mevatel a Dovar Min HaTorah. Shofar. How is Chazal allowed to tell you that when Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos, you do not blow shofar? The Torah says, blow shofar the first day of Chodesh of the 7th month. So how could Chazal say, no, don't blow shofar if it's Shabbos? You may come to carry the shofar in the street. You can't go against what the Torah says. The Rabban have the power to add safeguards, to add new mitzvahs. But to tell you not to do something, the Torah says to do it. So what is the answer? The answer is, they can tell you not to do something if it's only once in a while. They're not completely uprooting it from the Torah. Being that, most of the time, Rosh Hashanah does not fall out on Shabbos, so most of the time, we do blow shofar on the first day of Chodesh Shvi, Chodesh Tishrei. Occasionally, Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. So since they're not being oiker it, they're not uprooting it entirely, they're only uprooting it occasionally, and furthermore, the way they uproot it is not by doing something, by telling you not to do something. When you have that combination, that's permitted. If the way they tell you not to fulfill something it says in the Torah is by just don't do it, in contrast to doing something against the Torah, but just don't do something, and when they tell you not to do something, it's not completely uprooting this concept because it has other applications, then it is permitted. That's why we listen to them when they tell us to not blow shofar on Shabbos, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, because we're not doing anything. That's how, and number two, it's only this year. But next year we will blow shofar on Shabbos. However, what about, what?
They wouldn't have the power to say no. But since we have a second day of Rosh Hashanah and we're always going to blow the second day,
okay, that's the only
reason they have the right to tell us.
It's an enhancement. Besides the fact that the other years. The
proof is, yeah, he says this is not on Rosh Hashanah, but on blowing on Yovel and Yom Kippur, that we do, because then if he didn't blow, so how come you blow on Yom Kippur when it's Shabbos? Because it says Be'asor LaChodesh. In other words, it says it twice. It's a double lashon in the pasuk.
That's an exception.
Because if he didn't blow, you wouldn't blow for another 50 years, and you could go through your whole life without hearing shofar blowing, and
you're
going to
miss your whole life. Very good. The other very common issue with this is discussed, is ribbis.
I'm talking, saying,
yes, but that's only when they're coming to give new mitzvahs, Chanukah, Purim, they're giving you new mitzvahs to enhance the Torah. But Chazal can't give you a mitzvah, tell you to do something against the Torah. Losasa Yamanu small, they give you new, something new to do.
Yesterday you told it is free country, yes?
It's a free country.
Free,
yes.
Country, no discrimination.
But
yes?
This shear is not a free shear.
Yeah. It's a not free country. No. Sometimes it's a dictator country.
What? Say it again? What?
If other people interrupt you and talk without any permission, you can't talk. I'm doing this, I am not allowed because I should.
Okay, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry.
Therefore, they are going to mock me, the chair, taking this. What?
You're right.
It's not that I live with the goy Muslim. Never they did like this.
Mayor, apologize to him now.
What is the way?
Mayor, come and apologize to him. Come, apologize. Come, apologize to him.
Phone is ringing. I went out right away.
You're right. I'm sorry. You're right.
30 years I work with the going in the office. Never, only respect. Only respect. Only mutual respect what between us. Why? Ashkenazi, Sephardi, we are Sunni and Shi'i. Kill each other in the Syria, not the way. Yiddish, Daishi, no?
You're right.
Now I'm right, but when you talk, I'm asking, not right. I hope anything.
You're right then also.
I came here to learn, to ask.
Okay. All right, let us finish up. They rastically. Okay, there are three levels of Kiddush. So I just want to touch upon this. And the other example, the very popular example, is ribbis. It says in the Torah, the severest prohibition to lend money to another Jew with ribbis. Are you okay? Hello?
Yes, I see.
Ribbis, it is a severe prohibition to lend money with ribbis. The Torah says, "Alenochri, sashach." Go right ahead. Right ahead. Some say there's even a mitzvah to lend. The Torah says, giving you a mitzvah derai, so you should lend money to a non-Jew with interest. And yet Chazal came along and they said, no, don't even lend money to a goy. And this is a controversial topic. Did they say, is there a takar, not a takar, different opinions in this matter? How could it be, according to the opinions of those who hold that midrabanan, you should not lend money to a goy with ribbis? You cannot make a takana that goes against what the Torah says. This is a very big topic of conversation in halach. Another very big topic is this. There are three ways for a man to marry a woman. Kesef, shtar, and bia. Torah says, ki yikach, ein kicha ela bia, the Gemara's drasha. How can Rav come along and say, don't you dare? Don't you dare? If someone does something like this, Rav mangid, and my Rav will give the person, Rav gave malchus, he beat the person up, anyone that did such a thing. How could that be? Rav cannot be oikar dovim in a Torah, which it says beferish to do. So the answer is, no, there is one application where it does work. And that is, yibum. Yibum is still basically done with bia. That's really the way. That's really the way it works.
Nowadays,
there's kedushin before, but it's still the dynamics are a little bit different. The dynamics of the way yibum works. The dying, when the husband dies, the person dies. That already is the automatic. That's already. Okay, I know it's true, but you have to work it out. But the concept is very, very front and center that it creates a kinyan. It does create a kinyan. Okay. The mean is a weak kinyan. It's not. It's not equivalent to erison. It's only midrabanan. It's not a deraisa. There's no mamzerus. It's a weak. So, being that this concept of bia does exist in halacha and Chazal didn't touch it, by the case of yibum. Because just because the woman already is partially married when the brother dies, but that's not a marriage. That's only a losase. That's not the equivalent of what kiddushin makes into a full fledged marriage, to the degree that if a woman would have a child with someone else, the child would be a mamzer. So we do find it elsewhere. So some of the farshim we're going to see says that these three expressions ve'erastich li liolam ve'erastich li b'tzedek b'shulchas rachem ve'erastich li b'mun refers to why three different erastichs, because it refers to erison. Erastich is erison. How does one create erison? Three ways. Kesef, shtar, bia. Now go the next step. Okay, all the darshanim here. What's the next step? So which one corresponds to what? Okay, so l'oilam, pashas, you go in order. Erastich l'oilam is kesef, l'oilam. Rabbi Yisrael, I tell you a very big secret. You all know the secret. I'll tell you a big secret, Rabbi Yisrael. Money is not everything. It's the only thing. So le'olam is money, kesef. But tzedek or mishpat uve chesed uve rachamim, this corresponds to shtar. Why is shtar? Shtar is takot. It's the ultimate mishpat. I mean. Okay, you have to. For now, we have to figure out more in detail. And they rastichli be'emuna v'yodat es Hashem v'odom yoda eschava ishtoi. And what happened? They had a child. What did Rashi say? And what does Pasuk say? The odom yoda eschava ishtoi. And they had the next verse. She had a baby. The word da dea means bia. It represents bia. So the third erastich corresponds to the be'emuna. Emuna represents a mindset, an emotional bond. Okay, what is a maisa, a marital relations? It's all about the connection between two people, meaning of the minds, and it results in the adam yoda eschava ishtoi. That's what it says in the pasuk is bia, v'hayu, and they had a child. So that's bia, and then le'olam is forever. This has to be understood. The world, the way the world works, is the world works on money. That's really what it's all about. The whole world is all about le'olam. Something that is the common chut that goes from beginning of time to end of time is the earning of material benefit. It does not change to earn a living, to earn money, wealth. And then when you talk about tzedek, mishpat, chesed, rachman, these are typical things. Tzedek and mishpat certainly are documents. That's in court, related to the court. It's all about documents. What are chesed rachamim? How does that relate to a document? I don't know. Maybe if it alludes to the ksuba, but the ksuba is not the shtar. That's a whole different thing altogether, the ksuba. I don't know. Chesed Rachim definitely fits well into a ksuba, because in the ksuba the husband is guaranteeing that in the case that he dies, he will do with his wife Chesed Shalemes. He guarantees that she will be supported after he dies. The money will go to her to support her, and that's Chesed Rachim. But that's not the shtar of Erisin. That's a shtar that is a Takonas Chazal. Maybe you could extrapolate a little bit over here as well. But Beit HaTadi over here is, we have over here three different psukim, and the three psukim, the Mefarshim, I think maybe the Gross says what I just told you a little bit, not exactly, but along these lines, is a corresponds to Kesef, Shtar, and Kiddushin. I just want to take note is that out of the Minag Yisrael, you see the parallel is, how do we give Kesef? You never went to a wedding when the Chosin gave the Kala money, cash. You ever go to a wedding and the chassan gives the kala $100 bill? Here, I'm marrying you. Here's $100. Here's a suitcase of cash. I just robbed the bank. Here it is. You're under the chuppah. Here's a suitcase. She opens it up. Okay, let's proceed. You never saw that. Or gold coins, silver coins. You never saw that. Well, how does the chassan marry a kala? A tabas. He gives her a ring. Where does a ring come from? Where are you getting a ring from? So this is a whole topic of discussion. Why a tabas? How did the tabas become the symbol of kesef? But you can't deny the fact that the minuk is such a powerful minuk, is that when we recite these psukim, we make rings. We make three rings around our finger. The way when we, just like when a person marries a woman, he gives her a ring to form as the kesef kiddush, to form the erisin, the erastich. When we symbolically connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every morning, we put on that film, we say the erastich li le'olam, the erastich li betzedek of mishnah, the chesed v'rachamim, the erastich li the emun of yodatis Hashem. We make three rings around our fingers. So you see how far it goes, the koyach of the minog of the mekadesh, the kesef shall be given in the form of the tabas kiddushin. More on this tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem.
Erasin is basamech, yeris eras.